It's Jenny and Bill with Simple Bath and Kitchen.
We know the world feels a little crazy sometimes, but your home, that should be your safe place.
A beautiful kitchen for your family, a bathroom that feels like your own private retreat.
At Simple Bath and Kitchen, we have a fine-tuned process that makes remodeling something that you can actually enjoy.
Because when everything outside is unpredictable,
your home should be exactly what you need it to be.
Visit us at simplebathandkitchen.com to regain your peace today.
We make it simple for you.
Off the ball. GAA.
What is it about the Dingle Peninsula that creates such great football? Oh,
it's an interesting one, isn't it? There's a storied tradition in there, and they're obviously on a crest of a wave at the minute.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Mick McCarthy here with you until 10 p.m. tonight, standing in for Owen. Manchester United turned back the clock on Saturday at Old Trafford, a 2-0 win in the derby against Man City. That really could have been 5. Whether it's a turnaround or here to stay or not under Michael Carrick, it was the best day for United fans in quite a while. So on tonight's football show, we'll talk to Andy Mitten about the day itself and what it all means. We'll also catch up with Richard Jolly about City's awful form and how pretty much every team is in awful form right at the moment. Munster's form has gone from worrying to worse in recent weeks, and their home defeat against Cast on Saturday means they're out of the Champions Cup in the group stages for just the second time ever. Gerry Thornley and Liam Tolan will chair the post-mortem on Monday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock tonight. It was a genuinely unbelievably busy weekend of sport, and we'll get through it all this hour, including Dingle's historic All-Ireland win in Croke Park yesterday. If you want to talk about any of it with us, you can WhatsApp us 087-9180-180. Delighted to say that Stephen Doyle is in here for our elongated Monday news round. Steve-o, how are you?
All good, Mick. Thank you.
And also joined by Kathleen McNamee tonight. Kathleen.
Hi, guys.
How are things?
All good.
It was genuinely a mad weekend. It started off on the game at Old Trafford, lunchtime on Saturday, and went all the way to an overtime win for the Rams over the Bears in, I think, what was the coldest looking pitch I've ever seen in sport at about 4:30 this morning. And it kind of never stopped at any point in between. Any particular highlight for you, Kathy?
I think the club final, the football, it was just such a great game of football. You could see how much it meant to both sides. There were some unbelievable scores in the game, and you genuinely didn't know until the final whistle went which way it was going to go. You know, at any given point throughout the game, either side could have won it. And it just so happened that it was Dingle, and then the celebrations were just brilliant.
What was remarkable for me about it was there was so much even going on in other games and stuff at the time, and when watching it, it was like, in a weekend when I genuinely never stopped watching sport from like start to finish, I'd probably pick two highlights, and they'd probably both be from that game. So Bridget's last second two-pointer equaliser, and the way that was set up, and how both players, both in terms of the pass and the taking the actual score on, was just brilliant football, and the drama of all that, and Michael Gainey's winning point. And it's funny, this thing, as you always should do whenever a Kerry footballer does anything, you always have to check what Radio Kerry were doing when the moment happened.
Oh, they're done for broke here. St. Bridget's, it's with the centre back, Brian Stack, looking up the clock. If 81-12, the ball's going to be broken. It's broken into Dinglebat's hands. Oh, brilliant stuff by Dingle at the back. One of the best club finals of all time. They couldn't write this. The delight to the mid of the pass. I've win Min from the likes of Jack Welch, James Sheehy. Man, Min, that have gone to their eternal reward. They're looking down at this performance today. For every Dingle man, Dingle woman, you have reached the promised land. Amherst on the scoreline. Dingle 23, St. Bridget's of Roscommon 119.
Yes, bit of music there.
It's like poetry whenever you're listening to it, you know, to capture a moment that well and to bring you along. Even as someone who has no ties to Kerry whatsoever, you know, you can feel yourself being totally brought along by them.
That accent is the ultimate Shanachie accent. Amber's Donovan on Cocom there, but Tim Moynihan, the voice you're hearing from Radio
And it was
Kerry.
The Rolling Stones, of course, creeping in there. You can't always get what you want, which Dingle proved is wrong. You can always
well,
get what
absolutely.
You want.
But there's so many stories in the Dingle, like, you know, in everything about it. Like, you know, again, Michael Gainey, that winning point in his story. And, you know, obviously Mark O'Connor has taken up a lot of headlines and so on. I think what was actually most remarkable in many ways was I've been to, you know, I've gone on Paddy's Day to the club finals and all. But I always think the thing about club is, you know, it's the most important thing for your area. It's like there's nothing that can touch it. But as a as a national interest, it takes a good story to get you in, because it is, again, it's for a local thing. So I'm not always living and dying by what's happening in the club final. Like, I mean, I love hurling and I watched Ballygunner and Knockray, but it was what it was. It was good for Ballygunner, you know, but but this Dingle thing, it's not just the stories, it was the games. So like the semi-final against Ballyboden was one of the most dramatic football games I've ever watched. And then you're watching yesterday thinking, well, like, it'll go one way or another, but it won't anywhere near match that. And it arguably was better than it, and even more dramatic and more, you know, heart-stopping. And that's actually, I think, what's the most memorable thing about Dingle's win.
Yeah, and there was so much on the line. And I think as well, you'd heard between the semi-final and the final, we'd heard so much from so many great voices from the area. And obviously, Gaeltacht being in there as well over the last couple of weeks in terms of the news headlines. It felt like the club had kind of almost reached out to the rest of the country and was like, you guys are coming along on this journey with us. We are going to tell you exactly why people love club. We're going to tell you exactly why we love our club, but it's going to make you love your own club a little bit more as well. And it's going to make you think about your own club a little bit differently as well. And, you know, you guys had some great pieces during the week on it. And we saw some of that even coming up again in the post-match yesterday by the lads whenever they were talking, like, post celebrations. And I think that's the thing that really made it stand out for me, because I've actually gone to this is the first time in a couple of years that I haven't gone to the club finals. And again, I haven't had any ties to any of the teams over the last couple of years. It's just something to do with a January weekend. And I was actually raging yesterday that was the one that I decided not to go to. I was like, God, it's a bit cold and wet. I'll just watch it at home. Because again, I also didn't think that it was going to live up to the matches that we had seen previously. I thought it was just going to swing one way, and I was terribly, terribly wrong. So my apologies to the people of Dingle and St. Bridget's.
Yeah, like you said, heart-stopping, Mick. I genuinely thought our man Tommy Rooney's heart was going to stop. I was doing Aston Villa versus Everton yesterday on the radio and was crossing over to Tommy, and every time I went over to Tommy, I thought the man's heart was generally going to stop. And I was just thinking, I hope Johnny Higgins is still there, because we need access to a defibrillator just in case poor Al Rooney has a bad turn here, because it sounded like he was just losing his mind.
You're a better man than me there, Steve-O, because when you said, I hope Johnny Higgins is still there, I thought it was so he can go and get the post-match when Tommy's dead.
I actually thought that's where you were going with it as well.
But it kind of, and listen, you know, I didn't get to see the full match, obviously, because we're doing a game.
As you were commenting on the worst Premier League game of all time. Just kind of,
well, do you know what? It wasn't actually a bad game. You only said it because Villa lost. But anyway, it just fell when Bridges got that 2 point. You're kind of thinking, this is the end of the road. This is where their luck has run out. Sorry, not luck. That's quite disparaging.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah, this is where the run ends.
This is where the run ends. It was like, 2 pointer. And then, look, Mikey Gainey would have another bit of magic. Just incredible.
He was brilliant, and Paul Gainey was brilliant, and Mark Connors was brilliant, and so many of them, and so many of the ones that wouldn't be household names as well. But I have to say, like, Tom O'Sullivan, you know, and he did it. And it's funny, because Paul Gainey mentioned this in the aftermath as well. He mentioned it. He quietly did it in the semi-final as well and didn't get as much of the plaudits. But, you know, this guy, you know, who's like nominally a cornerback anyway, he is actually one of the best markers in the game, so should play cornerback, but he's always been a great player going forward or whatever. But how he took the game by the scruff of the neck in extra time yesterday, they would not have won it without him, because Bridget's, in fairness, were fantastic. And that's, I think, you know, it takes two teams to have a great game, and Bridget's were a huge part of it. And as you say, when they got that 2-pointer, and a few times, I think, both in normal time and in extra time, I kind of thought Bridget's had it. I didn't think Dingle had anything left in them. They kept coming back. I have to say, the 2-pointer is, I was so unsure about it, because it does change the entire nature of the game and how it's been scored in for however long. But how it has created closer contests has been absolute. Like, I don't know whether that was one of the intended consequences or not, but it has, because you're almost never out of it, because you can just go and get a quick 4 points now. You're not, everything isn't just about like having to score a goal all the time. And it's really kept games like alive for longer.
I was quite surprised yesterday towards the end of the extra time. I actually did think that Dingle were going to kind of do that thing that we saw happening in the championship a little bit last year, where, you know, they hold the ball for ages around the 2-point line and just kind of let the time eke away, and then hopefully get your 2-pointer, and then that seals a victory for you. And I was really hoping that wouldn't happen. And to be fair, it actually didn't. Like, both teams were going back and forth. There was no sort of, you know, playing to the clock.
No.
And I think that added
they
as well.
They arguably should have before normal time when Paul Gailey got, you know, it's funny, you have a 1-point lead and the ball. Is that better than a 2-point lead and lose the ball? Paul Gailey scored, right, but you know, right, his time was up, and you're kind of thinking that's the sealer, and you're like, oh, it's not anymore.
I can imagine if I was a Dingle fan watching it, I probably would have been screaming at them to do exactly that. But as a neutral watching it, it just added to the contest even more. And I genuinely thought when the last ball broke and Bridgets were running up the pitch, that that was going to be the moment that, you know, there was a minute left of extra time, and then that was going to be the moment. And then the ball broke favourably for Dingle and they managed to pull it round. But I do love the 2-pointer. I think it has added a lot to the game. I think it's, as you said, it's made, you're more invested for longer, even in games where there is a bit of a gap between the teams in terms of the score, just because you know things can turn around very, very quickly. And I think it added to some like absolute cracker games last year in the championship. The only thing I don't like is that sort of holding the ball for ages towards the end.
I think it even applies more to club football because of the fact that it's rare in club football, the nature of it being 60 minutes long, that it's rare you see teams, and especially because they're so, you know, when you get to the business end of the competition, that it's rare you see teams streaking ahead of each other in those matches. So it's usually tight. So it does lend itself to be more exciting with regard to the 2-pointer. But as I said a couple of weeks ago, Mick, the Kerry behemoth.
Oh, non-stop. Your man hasn't even turned up today because he couldn't yarrow this one away.
Oh, I tell you, honestly.
I was going to say, I haven't seen Unchained in a long time.
I was on the Lewis today. And a couple of Dingle supporters, a few Dingle supporters got on with their suitcases in around the Sandyford area, I think it was, on the Lewis. And tell you one thing, it looked like they had a bloody good night last night.
That's it. That's what you want to hear. We'll get to a little bit more of the football in a few minutes. We have some audio to play, but there's, like, again, just to kind of recap on some of the weekend, it might not be a highlight for me anyway, but like the Munster game against Cast was an unbelievable event in itself, and like a kind of a shocking kind of ending when you know, or not, and maybe last 10-15 minutes when it looked like it was getting away from them, but it was a game they could have won and you thought they would, and it felt like that Saturday night in Thomond Park in a must-win game, and they just about do it and they didn't. And like, we'll talk loads about that with Liam and Jerry after 8 o'clock, but that was one that was like, again, would nearly be the thing to talk about here at 7 o'clock on a normal Monday. You had Shane Lowry, I don't know if any of you are watching this, but like, this was incredible. I just said, like, you know, just woke up yesterday morning thinking, I'm doing this. I'm doing the whole weekend of sport. What's happening in the golf? And I went, right, okay, great. So I ended up watching like nearly the whole last round, where you kind of felt like one of Rory or Shane would make a move. Rory had an unbelievable run, but it was a bit too late. But Shane himself, prime position. And he just played the 18th awfully and ended up double bogey. Hit it into a bad bunker where Rory had just been before. And I think we knew more than Shane did how tough a shot this was, because we just watched Rory do it. And it just kept going and going and going and into the water. And you're like, I can't believe this.
Do you know something though? And you were asking about highlights, and I was kind of thinking, is it Larry?
These are lowlights.
But no, I was thinking, is it Larry at the AFCON? The reason I say Larry a highlight, because like so many times last year, he was in contention for a tournament and he was gone by the third round. You know, he'd have good opening two rounds. At least he's there till the end of, almost till the end of play. So that gives me, and just the way he's speaking this week in the build-up to the Dubai Invitational, he was just talking about the fact that he was around Rory, being around Rory, and just kind of, I suppose, you know, just trying to draw on that positive energy around McIlroy after his brilliant year last year, and that he felt that that put him in good stead for the upcoming year. So look, it's the first tournament. He was there right till the end. It was unlucky, I felt, that the way that ball dropped and into the drink. So listen, I would just be optimistic, really, more so after the way it went. It was just a bit of bad luck, really, at the end.
No, definitely. And look, I mean, it's about form at this time of year more than anything else. But then, I suppose as well, the first thing I mentioned, the Manchester Derby, there was an
You'd almost forget it happened at this stage. Like, it feels so long ago because so much has happened.
Exactly.
But it was such a stunning result at the same time.
And it was a really poor Premier League weekend in many ways. Like, I mean, interesting in its own way. You could talk about all the individual games as interesting, but it was a kind of a nothing. And it's that much maligned half 12 kickoff. But the electricity in Old Trafford was just something I don't remember in a while, good while. And the performance from United outside, they've had results like this, plenty of them, but I don't remember them playing against a big team and killing them in years. And they did that. And it would have been, I remember when Mbeumo scored and you're thinking, like, that is the most, that was the goal that was the most, that's been coming. Mm. You know, I remember in football in a while. Like, you know, it was bizarre that they weren't ahead by that stage. And obviously lots of tight calls for offside and so on, but City were just there to be taken, and that's not something that you would associate United with actually doing and taking advantage of over the last few years.
What do you think it is that prompted that sort of electricity in the crowd? Like, was it just the managerial appointment or just how the team played?
I think it was the lineup, and I think it was how United started, because as much as they were on board, like, it was just another new manager. They had one 2 weeks ago, and if you heard the United fans outside Old Trafford after the Brighton game, they were ready to give up on the club, I think, you know. So I don't know if it was excitement about Michael Carrick. I think it was the two lads were back from AFCON, their injuries had cleared up, and they just started on fire. And Casemiro was brilliant. I thought Fernandez was brilliant. Mm. They defended really well. Like, I mean, City gave them the opportunity, I think, to defend well, Steve-O. Mm.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, I don't think so. They didn't have much invention, but if you're playing to United's strengths, they did everything well, and they just were so up for it, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And look, listen, we have to, I suppose, caveat the whole thing with the fact that City are down some big players. They're missing a couple of key players in that team. I don't think we're going to see him back to his best until next season.
Yeah.
He's still, like, he's missed pre-season. He's still coming back from that injury, and arguably the best midfielder in the English Premier League and perhaps in the world. But I just felt that, do you know something about Old Trafford? Like, it's always got a really good atmosphere. And to be fair to the United supporters, they have, even when things have been going bad under previous managers, they've stuck by them. Like, they have thrown their support behind the managers. Now, listen, I know there's been times where managers have been booed there, but it's never got as poisonous as, like, Tottenham at the moment. Mm. You know, it's never got that bad. They are, you know, good supporters. The Stretford End is always phenomenal, and it just took that. There was that bit of swagger about United's play. It was that kind of, you know, the counter-attacking football down the wings, through the middle. Like, it was just, it was exciting to watch them the other night. We'll come to the story later in the news round, but my first thought was after the game, though, was we've had this new manager bounce from United before. Yeah. We've seen them pulling out these big results, but they can't back it up a couple of weeks later. So they need to get consistency. It's one thing Carrick spoke about after the game.
He did. And I think that all I would say is, as a first test, they did everything right, including the way they talked after the game. And the way I said it on Friday's show, what United had to do there was play to the atmosphere, play to the crowd, and go out and do old school football, win your battles.
Yeah.
You know, and take advantage of the fact that they're actually a perfectly set up team with that kind of speed to take advantage of a City defence that is non-existent at the moment. But they did everything right. You know, it's not to say they'll do anything next time, but I do think they should enjoy this while they give, because every Monday we come on here slamming them about how much of a farce they are. So I think it's only fair that they enjoy, even if it is a one-off.
I should just say as well, like, it was remarkable watching United against City and also Liverpool versus Burnley, because it frustrates me so much at Manchester City. They've got good wingers, you know. They've got the like Jeremy Doku. Now, I know that reducer from Dalot at the start of the match might have, you know, would have had him thinking at the back of his mind, I want to leave Old Trafford here with my kneecaps, so I'm not going to go past Dalot again, you know. But like, he's one of the best wingers in the league. And not once after that Dalot tackle did he try and go down the line and beat Dalot on the outside. And every time you're watching City and they're playing against a deep-lying defence, ball goes into the winger, ball comes back into central midfield to Rodri, he knocks it forward to Phil Foden, he tries to through ball or to run through United defence, and then it's blocked, cleared away, and it's over and over and over again. And Liverpool were the same against Burnley. At the end of that game against Burnley at Anfield, out to the wingers, back in the middle, try and go through the centre of the box. Can't get, and it's just like these Guardiola and Slot, for some reason, cannot come up with some sort of an alternative to get through teams that are defending deep against them.
And it just feels like teams have figured it out. We'll talk to Richard Jolly about it a little bit later on, because again, it's just that, that Manchester City semicircle around the box. I never thought in a million years that United were going to, you know, give up anything to them. You know, the worst you thought was that they'll dive in and give a penalty away in a City situation, but it would have been entirely United's fault. City weren't creating anything. So, anyway, that's deeper than we thought. A couple of texts here before we get into the news. And shocking result for Arsenal. Arsenal gained points on the Villa and City this week. But
I know, but again, it's another one where it's really frustrating to watch, because they keep getting to these moments where City will drop points or Villa will drop points, and Liverpool. Just, I know Liverpool aren't really in there. Just slam the ball in the net.
It was an interesting game in that I thought that there was that sort of sense of Arsenal are grinding them down in the way they do all teams. But funny enough, Forest are nearly the hardest team to do that with, because of the way their defence is built. And the longer it took for them to grind them down, the more Forest came into the game and got a foothold. And in the second half, it was actually quite even. But anyway, Patrick is saying, what's the point in buying a striker if you won't give him the ball? I presume talking about Gyökeres. The same goes for City with Haaland. Okay. Munster Rugby need to give more academy players an opportunity in the first team, like Michael Foy, Brian Gleeson, Danny Sheehan, Edwin Adogbo, Sean Adogbo, Evan O'Connell, Ruan Quinn, etc. Also, that coaching ticket has been there for a few years. Does a head coach need to bring in his own staff, says Kieran? Interesting stuff. And some of the points that we will be talking about with Jerry and Liam a little bit later on. Someone says, what about them Patriots back to the AFC Conference Final, favourite to go to the Super Bowl? Who would have thought about that a year ago? Johnny Hollywood from Limerick here in a cold Nantucket, Massachusetts. There you go, Johnny. Hope you're enjoying the freezing cold. Patriots are back. I have to say, as a Munster Aston Villa Patriots fan, as things were going badly in the fourth quarter last night, I was thinking, this is a crappy weekend. But,
throw Shane Airy in there as well.
I was going to say, are we straight in the water?
Things picked up anyway for the Pats, and they are there. So just a couple more. Limo on YouTube says, can't wait for Tom Sullivan to be back in, for Kerry this year. Some player to be able to bring into an All-Ireland winning team. I know. And then the last one here, because this is going to lead us into the news round. The AFCON final last night was chaos, but very entertaining. Very enjoyable game of football, but was overshadowed by 5 minutes of controversy before full time. Steve, that's where you're going to start.
Five?
I know, yeah.
That's closer to 20.
He must have had a stopwatch out.
Probably dozed off there while the stopwatch was happening in our texter. Well, yeah, look, Senegal winning the Africa Cup of Nations for a second time after they defeated Morocco in last night's final in Rabat. The match overshadowed by incredible scenes on and off the field, with Senegal players staging a protest and their supporters spilling out of the stands. That was after the hosts were awarded a stoppage time penalty with the match goalless. Referee Jean-Jacques Ndala gave the spot kick in the 98th minute. That came on the advice from the video assistant referee, who recommended a review of defender El Hadji Malik Diouf's challenge on Brahim Diaz. Head coach Papa Chow, who just minutes before was angered by the referee's decision to disallow a Senegal goal, ushered his team off the field. A former Liverpool striker Sadio Mane stayed on the pitch, urging his Senegal teammates to return and finish the game. And after a delay of around 17 minutes, the players came back. Morocco's Real Madrid forward Diaz, the tournament's golden boot winner with 5 goals, went for a Panenka penalty. The ball caught by Senegal goalkeeper Edouard Mendy, and Ndala immediately blew his full-time whistle. Villarreal midfielder Papa Gay then scored the winning goal in the 4th minute of extra time. A cracker of a shot to seal a second triumph in 5 years for the Lions. In his post-match news conference, Morocco coach Walid Regui said Senegal's actions were shameful and do not honour Africa. Today, the Moroccan Federation announced it's pursuing legal procedures with FIFA and African governing body CAF. It wants Senegal sanctioned, while CAF has referred the case to the relevant bodies, and FIFA strongly condemning the actions.
This is mad. You know,
it's a hard match to know where to start with it, because it actually, for a game that didn't have many goals for so long, it was like entertaining watching, like good football. And
Senegal
then
were the better team, weren't they? I think they'd figured out Morocco from what I could see, and like would have felt hard done by.
Yeah, I think so.
But like, small overreaction, I would say.
Just a tidy one. I mean, I kind of feel if you walk off the pitch and there's a 17-minute delay while general chaos erupts all around the stadium, then you're forfeiting the match.
Yeah. At least let them take the penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, probably top 10 worst penalties I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, you were saying that, Sivo. Even as a bad Panenka, this was a bad one.
It's just, you know, there seems to be a kind of a social media story out there that it was a deliberate miss by Diaz. Now, I do not buy that for 1 minute. I do, and this seems to be going against the majority feeling. I do think it was a penalty because I think if you yank a player by the collar like that, doesn't matter how much force you put into it, but if you yank a player like that in the box, you're giving away a penalty. That's it. Like, it doesn't matter about the force or whatever. Like, it's just ridiculous. I think it was a moment of madness from Jeff. He's a young enough player. He's played well for West Ham this season. But Diaz, and look, he might have made the most of it, to come out. And like, with all that pressure, your team looking to win the AFCON in your home stadium, and to decide to do a Panenka. Like, it's proper Real Madrid brain.
After a 20 minute delay, we're rioted.
I had a proper rant about this on the weekend show with Eve Conway a couple of weekends ago, because I just I think it's the most selfish thing in the world as a footballer, to your teammates, to the management, to the fans, to attempt something like that in a game. Like, okay, maybe if you're 10-0 up or something, that's fair enough. But in a game of that quality, a game of that caliber, a game of that importance, where does your brain go that I'm going to try and chip the goal?
Is it the highest percentage chance to score a goal? The answer is no.
No.
You know, and that's where the selfishness, as you say, comes into it. You're looking for a highlight reel.
But even when it goes in, I'm still even if it was a team that I supported and a player did that and they did score it, I would be annoyed. I wouldn't get the glory of that goal or the enjoyment of that goal, because I'd be like, why bother attempting that?
It was all over. Like, that was the last kick of the game. If he had kicked that in, he's getting carried out of the stadium on the shoulders of his teammates. And like, it's just completely selfish, as you say, Kathleen. And it's just like, idiot. You idiot, Diaz. What are you doing? Like, it's just, I even hate players trying to place penalties. Penalties aren't that hard. If you hit a penalty with enough force and speed, it's going to beat the keeper. It doesn't matter if he dives the wrong way. Just put your bloody laces through it. It's as simple as that. Once you get the direction on it correctly, it's in. And he made a mess of it. And like, I hope he's feeling like an idiot today. I hope he feels sorry.
He
let his team down. He let his fans down.
Getting the golden boot from Infantino.
Amazing.
Amazing. Fucking human being.
I saw somebody with the captain saying, look, if you don't want this, I know a guy in the United States.
Exactly. I'm sure Gianni had given him as well, personally.
But as well, the other thing remember Dublin played Cork in the 1983 All-Ireland semi-final, and they went down for the replay in Páirc Cuíve. And there was the famous Dublin penalty had to be kicked into the empty goal. Like, I don't know why Morocco didn't just do that.
Yeah.
Like, the penalty into an empty goal.
That was a league semi-final, wasn't it?
League semi-final.
I know what you're talking about, because it was like, Barney Rock threw it into nobody. Barney Rock read down the pitch and the match had to be abandoned because there was no one to kick it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Can I just, small devil's advocate for Senegal, I think it was a ridiculous thing to do. It's so unprofessional, and talk about like letting your emotions get on top of you. So I've prefaced that, obviously, but devil's advocate. You're in Morocco in a tournament that, like, you know, probably has a little bit of history of, like, you know, of some dodgy enough decisions, right? You're in Morocco, they're in the final. You've dominated the game. You've been like, you've really a good managerial performance, because tactically I think they just had Morocco, right? You get this goal disallowed, you think it's an absolute joke, no way it should not be disallowed, and seconds later they get a penalty that you honestly think, as you say, you make the case for the penalty, but they honestly think it's a disgrace and they've done us here. And in that moment, and the match is basically over anyway, they're saying, it's like, we're not going to give them the satisfaction of taking this away from us. Now you step back and you say, that was all wrong. But I'm just saying that it's not to defend the action, but it's almost to defend the emotion.
Yeah, and I should, just to get balance, Senegal's goal should have stood. I think Hakimi was disgraceful there as well. Like, I don't know what you thought, Kathleen. It should have scored that goal. But as well, I think Sadio Mane's reaction really kind of, he was there in the heat of the moment and you could see he looked embarrassed, didn't he? He was like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, this is.
Even the fact he had to front up afterwards and answer for the team and saying, like, well, it was obvious we were always going to come back out on the pitch, you know, that was just a slight blip during the game.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, I can totally understand the emotions that they would have felt and the annoyance, but I still don't think you walk off the pitch. I think if you walk off the pitch, unless, you know, there's an actual danger to the team, you know, or like there's a danger from the crowd.
Or a protest in terms of like something.
Or a genuine protest about something. But I think in the context of this match, if the way they walked off.
Not a protest at a refereeing decision. That's not a good enough reason.
No, that should have been a forfeit in my head of the game.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we've gone through quite a bit of the sporting weekend, but believe it or not at all. So we're going to get back to Steve-O's news round in just a minute. We'll take a bit of a break first. Right, you are welcome back. We are in the midst of our news round tonight with Kathleen McNamee and Stephen Doyle. Steve-O, we're Thomas Frank. Staying for now.
We are Thomas Frank.
We are. We're going to talk about Thomas
Frank. I'm Thomas Frank.
We are all Thomas Frank.
Yeah. It's understood Thomas Frank will remain in charge for tomorrow night's Champions League tie with Borussia Dortmund, despite increasing pressure. Supporters loudly booed after the defeat to West Ham United in the Premier League on Saturday. They're also heard to chant, "You're getting sacked in the morning," at their beleaguered head coach. Spurs chiefs were said today to be looking at alternative options following board level talks, but Frank is confident he has their full backing. Speaking at today's Champions League Matchday Minus One press conference, Frank insisted it's business as usual.
I've just been feeling the trust along the way. I've said that every press meeting that there's backing and support. I had lunch with Nick and Vinay and Johan today, so all good. I know it's part of the media circus, and the only focus I have is to do everything I can for us to win tomorrow against Dortmund.
Yeah, I think it's borrowed time, I have to say. That the West Ham game was the first individual result that felt unforgivable.
Yeah, I think they could be in trouble tomorrow. It was interesting. They put a question to Xavi Simons and said, look, do the players feel like they've got to go out there and put in a performance for the coach? And he kind of gave the generic footballer answer, never actually saying anything in support of Thomas Frank. That would always concern me that, you know, if he still has the support of the players, they're going to say something, just go, you know, we're fully behind Frank here, you know. But there was nothing like that. And it was interesting looking at if you look at the press conference on YouTube, the two of them look wrecked. Like Frank, like they're playing at home in London, they're still in London. Frank's got bags under his eyes. Simons even had kind of dark circles under his eyes. And yeah, it doesn't look good. And Borussia Dortmund in decent form coming into this game. I'd be concerned if I was a Spurs fan tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Would your level of concern be that it'll be a hiding or just that it'll be a defeat?
No, that's my life your face, Kathleen.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mick.
Yeah. What a season.
I'm very, very concerned about Spurs and how they're getting on and their incredibly toxic atmosphere that they have.
Yeah.
Also, as a proud member of the Dark Circles Under My Eyes community, I'd say lay off the lads there a little bit. Few Irish stories to talk about.
Yeah, and before I actually get into that, I should mention yesterday we did the Villa Everton game. Big credit to Jacob Ryan, put in an absolutely phenomenal performance for the Toffees yesterday.
Should have scored a goal. You can argue all you like about interference and grand, I accepted it as a Villa fan, but that was a goal. No defender went with the Everton player who was offside who tried to header it.
Yeah, definitely. So. And that was the second time he's been chalked up by VAR because he scored against Spurs, believe it or not, earlier in the season. Also denied by the video assistant referee, but he played on the right, or sorry, in the left at the back, Tarkowski to his right, which isn't his good side, but he was still really, really good yesterday. And
both of them were really good, though. It was a real David Moyes at his very best performance, wasn't it? They knew what they were doing. They knew how to frustrate Villa, and all of the players were like so up for it.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of just won every battle, I think, you know.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, Nathan Patterson was very good at right back, which means that Michael Keane might struggle to get back into the team. Now, that's not good news for Seamus Coleman because he's fit again. He was on the bench yesterday for the first time. So that is good for Ireland. Hopefully the two players, and he will be fit by the time we get to Prague in March. also related to that, Troy Parrott, in good form at the moment, but he's got a new head coach at his club, Eredivisie side, Azzy Alkmaar, sacking Martin Martens less than a week after their 6-0 Dutch Cup defeat to Ajax. They lost 3-1 to Zwolle on Friday and are currently 8th in the table. The club's director of football, Max Herberts, said in a statement that he's strongly convinced there's more potential in this squad than we have seen recently. So hopefully he includes Troy Parrott in that. Fellow striker Johnny Kenny scored for Celtic in the Scottish Cup as they defeated Auchinleck Talbot away from home. The Hoops have been drawn with Dundee at home in the next round there. The prodigal son has returned to the Ryan McBride Brandywell over the weekend. James McLean is back home at Derry Q Christy Moore after coming to a mutual agreement with Wrexham to end his time at the Championship club. He signed a multi-year deal with Derry City, with whom he made 79 appearances and scored 16 goals before he left for Sunderland. And it was a great weekend for Ireland international Denise O'Sullivan. The Cork woman made her Liverpool debut in a 6-0 win at London Bees in the Women's FA Cup fourth round. O'Sullivan scoring the opener and is now set to make her league debut against Spurs at St Helens Stadium.
Well, record signing.
Yeah, record signing.
The saviour.
Really interesting one. Because obviously it had been rumoured for a couple of weeks now that she was going to sign for Liverpool, and considering the season that Liverpool are having, I think most people assumed it'd be what she normally does, where she comes over to the WSL, plays there during the off season and the NWSL, and then goes back over. So kind of does like a half season. But no, it's a full on permanent signing. I think it's a massive risk on her side, because I'm pretty sure Liverpool are going to get relegated this season. Yeah. Now, she may be the one to turn this around a little bit, considering
they
the
don't
caliber.
Have too much ground to make up, don't they?
It is tight at the bottom of the table, but they still haven't really shown themselves to even get those like little small wins or even a draw here and there to kind of eke themselves up the table a little bit. And just the size of the squad that they have, you know, it's tiny. You've Gareth Taylor in there, who I don't particularly rate as a manager, and I think he's trying to get them to play the sort of football he wants them to play, but they just don't have the players to do it. So it'll be interesting to see. I do hope she is the player that comes in and turns it around for Liverpool, because I said this on the show a couple of weeks ago. To me, it's absolutely disgraceful that a club the size of Liverpool would have their women's team in this position. And it's because of lack of investment and it's because of squad size. It's not just like a bad season for them. So yeah, hope for Denise's sake that she doesn't get into a relegation battle, because it's really, once you go down, it's very, very hard to get back up out of the Championship, because it's so competitive compared to the WSL.
Emma's been talking about this. We might do something on the show about it recently, but my impression of Denise O'Sullivan was always that she was quite happy in, you know, she's been in North Carolina for a long time, but there is this sense now that the American League has become quite diminished because of the money that's in the WSL. Mm. And these star players are not going to hang around there. And it'd be interesting to see how much that impacts the popularity of women's football in America, because if it is just the national team that has this kind of on par interest, there's an element of that not being sustainable either, because they will have a poor team from time to time.
Yeah, I think part of it as well, the culture shift has really come since Emma Hayes has become head coach of the US women's national team, because before that, all the funding for the players came directly from the USSF, I can never say that properly, but basically from the US Soccer Federation. That's where all the funding for all the big American players to basically keep them in the States came from. And then that stopped under Andonovsky. And then Emma Hayes came in, and like, she actually had to go in front of the NWSL last year and basically say to them, I swear I'm not telling all your players to go to Europe, because all of them were going to Europe at that time. So I think it will be interesting to see, does it change? But I do think that they are making changes now to the way that they do things to try and keep players there, you know, the likes of Trinity Rodman and stuff. I did find it quite entertaining. So that they have a deal that you can only spend a certain amount to keep players in the league, but they've had to put an asterisk on that now because so many players are complaining that they wanted to leave the league. And one of the things for you to qualify for this side thing is that if you come in the top 40 of the ESPN best players of the year 2 years in a row, which I created when I was at ESPN.
You should be getting a cut.
I know, but I was like, it's the most like unscientific process in the world ever. And I was like, I can't believe this is actually now one of the criteria for to keep the likes of like Trinity Rodman in the NWSL.
We'll keep you up to date on Kathleen's court case for a cut of that of all those players' extra money. We'll be looking forward to it. What day is Koiga coming out this week? The Denise O'Sullivan to Liverpool special?
We have one coming out tomorrow morning, actually, with Kelly Brady, who's just made the move over to Crystal Palace. And then there'll be another one later on in the week, which is
not in the can, and we'll actually have Denise O'Sullivan news. Yeah, absolutely. Steve-O McLean. Sorry, I do realise we have to rattle through here a little bit, but this is one of those things that's just like, you know, really exciting for the league, isn't it? Like, he's just got that year left in him, I would say, that everyone will want to go and see him.
Yeah, it's a Damien Duff kind of, you know, name in the league. He was hugely popular with Derry City supporters before he went off to Sunderland, and has had an amazing career in the UK. I saw many League of Ireland fans noting over the weekend when the move was confirmed that you've had a whole country, a whole league behind James McLean over the last number of years when he took his stance against the wearing of the poppy and all the abuse that he was taking from fans at various grounds in England and Wales, and the abuse that he took and the amount of support he's got from Irish citizens and League of Ireland supporters. And now that's all changed because the other nine teams in the league will be full of supporters who will be giving James McLean abuse over the next 9 or 10 months.
It's
got to be great to see. And look, he'll enjoy it. And I think it's brilliant. It is great and fair play to him because I watched him in that match against Wrexham playing in the Cup. Who was it against again? They beat them in the penalty shootout. Forest. And he still has legs. 36 years of age. He doesn't have the pace he would have had, but he's still got quality there. And look, Derry City are blowing an absolute fortune on their squad this season. If they don't win the league, it'll be a complete failure.
Yeah. Blowing is your feelings be known there. Let's get back to Croke Park. Unbelievable day for Dingle and for Ballygunner.
Incredible stuff. Dingle defeating St. Bridges after extra time in a dramatic All-Ireland Club football final at Croke Park. The Kerry side thought they had it wrapped up in normal time, but a two-pointer from Rory Fallon level that match at the final whistle. The Roscommon men had been on top in the extra period before Mikey Ganey's last gasp point won it for Dingle. The final score at Croker was Dingle 23, St. Bridget's 119. The victory completing a kingdom hat-trick of club football titles, with Buddy McElligott and Ungael Tucked also successful this year. Ganey spoke to our own Tommy Rooney after the win.
You're kind of able to get your head around the fact that we're all Ireland champions and stuff, but I genuinely think it could be years before this settles in, like what we've after achieving as a group and where we've come from, like, and you know, like I said to you last couple of weeks, like we've had a lot of losses and heartaches, and you know, you can nearly kind of half look back on them with a bit of fondness now, like that they're all just part of the journey, like, and just to get just all Ireland champions for 2025, I suppose you can never take that away from us, like, unreal.
And of course, great success for Ballygunner in the All-Ireland Club Hurling final there. The champions for the second time in their history, Mick. They pulled away from Loughrea to record a 6-point win in the decider.
Yeah, they were very impressive. Stephen O'Keefe, unbelievable player. Real loss that he's not playing inter-county hurling the last few years, but just the dominant team of the year. It almost made it less worthy of chat, if you know what I mean, but no less an achievement. Like, they've been absolutely unbelievable. We're running out of time here a little bit, but not great news on the injury front for so close to the Six Nations.
Yeah, well, there's actually a boost, mate, because it's all been going against Andy Farrell over the last couple of weeks.
Ignore the last 30 seconds.
Hugo Keenan won't see action in Galway for Leinster against Connacht this weekend, but I can tell you the news is positive for the Ireland international, who of course is returning from hip surgery. The fullback yet to feature for club or country since he came back from that Lions tour. Leinster revealed today he stepped up his on-field training alongside Jamie Osborne, who's been out with a shoulder knock since November. So meanwhile, Kieran Frawley and Jack Conan will be available to play that URC match on Saturday after they both made a return to training. Jimmy O'Brien, Robbie Henshaw, Tommy O'Brien and Tadhg Furlong will all be assessed later in the week. We do know Leinster will avoid heavyweights such as Bordeaux, Toulouse and Bath until the final of the Champions Cup. if they can make it that far. The Blues are drawn to face Edinburgh in the last 16 in April. Meanwhile, in the Challenge Cup, Ulster's reward for winning Pool 3 is a home clash with Ospreys, while Connacht will play host to the Sharks. Meanwhile, Munster, of course, failed to qualify for the knockout stage of the Champions Cup. They're now dropping down to the Challenge Cup and will face Exeter in the last 16 in April. It was interesting this morning listening to Alan Quinlan on Off the Ball Breakfast after their defeat at the weekend at Thoma Park.
They actually played quite well in the game, which, if you take the emotion out of it, 15 line breaks in the game, their attack looked so many times like they'd unpick the defence and get tries and get scores. Now, the switching off and the, you know, I think Clayton McMillan did speak about it. It's very obvious, you know, they get a score, they give away a score, they do something stupid. Their game management, individual decision making from players is at a level that you get punished in Europe. You know, you get away with some of that stuff in the URC. The kicking game was poor. And that's not just Jack Crowley. I think Shane Daly, Ben O'Connor, just poor kicking, inviting Cass back into the game when you get a score, and no kind of smart rugby smarts there at times. So, it's very, very concerning, I think, because I thought this was a good side. I thought there was a good impact off the bench. On paper beforehand, they actually did have a good impact, but very, very poor performance.
Yeah, that's very much along the lines of what we'll be talking to Jerry and Talim Toland about after the 8 o'clock news. Steve-O, we had a big day, big weekend in basketball, and big results for Cluster and Ballincollig.
Yeah, Cluster winning their fifth Domino's WSL National Cup, defeating Flomax Sliffey Celtic 70-64, avenging last season's defeat in the final to the same opponents. Samantha Hybe picked up the MVP with 30 points, closely followed by a 20-point performance from Cluster captain Michelle Clark. And Ballincollig, as you mentioned, have won their first ever Domino's MSL National Cup, following an impressive 104-77 win over Garvey's Tralee Warriors at the National Basketball Arena on Saturday. Latrell Jossel picked up the game MVP after an exhilarating performance, scoring 31 points.
And just quickly then, Boxing Elite Championships at the weekend.
Yeah, a couple of highlights. Kelly Harrington, of course, defeating Kelly McLaughlin in their 60kg final bout at the National Boxing Championships at the National Stadium. Harrington defeating her fellow dub via a 5-0 verdict. Aoife O'Rourke was crowned champion as she secured a unanimous decision in her 75kg final on Saturday night. The Castlereagh boxer dominating as she beat Shauna Carney of Bunclody in Wexford. Dana Morehouse, another of the Paris contingent to edge her bout, the Enniskerry flyweight, did defeat Belfast Caitlin Friars. Michaela Walsh winning a record 14th title against Sarah Cunningham. And just in the men's then, a couple of highlights. Jack Marley getting an unanimous win against Garen McAllister in the 90kg. Nathan Ojo, keep an eye out for him. Esker Dublin Boxing Club beating Robbie Olesola 5-0 from Galway. And then Patsy Joyce, we all know about him from the Olympic Club Mullingar, beating Clepson DeSantos in a unanimous win in the 95kg in the men's.
Brilliant stuff, Steve-O. Thanks a million for that. An epic Monday news round. Kathleen McNamee, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
In as well.
Too much sports.
Too much sport. Not enough time. That was Monday's news round.